It's been a quiet week here in Pittsburgh, my adopted hometown. The Pirates are in first place, and the weather's been quite nice. Enough heat and humidity to remind us that it's summer, but rain and cool breezes at night so we can sleep comfortably with the windows open. Several weeks ago, I received an invitation to my 35th high school reunion from Paola, Kansas. I'll pause to let you do the math. Paola High School of Paola, Kansas, class of 1978. School mascot, the Paola Panthers. The school theme song started like this. Hey, look us over, sound out a cheer. We are the Panthers, aren't you glad we're here? Put on black and gold, folks, get in the groove, and cheer us on to victory, because, hey, we're on the move. Now, there was more to the song, but by this point, the cheerleaders' pom-poms and jiggling gyrations had rendered every drooling teenage boy slack-jawed and incapable of singing any further. Due to schedule conflicts, I wasn't able to attend the reunion, but I did think about my classmates from Paola. This was never a group to be overly concerned about etiquette or social convention. The reunion invitations were Xeroxed on plain paper and mailed in what looked to be recycled credit card bill envelopes. At our 20th class reunion, no one had remembered to get name tags, and so the host simply wrote our names on pieces of duct tape. There were about 110 in our graduating class, a large enough group that even when we were in school together, you didn't really get to know a good chunk of your classmates. And now, 35 years later, with early senility setting in, what were the odds of remembering anybody's name, especially if they forgot to buy name tags again? The problem with class reunions is that you haven't seen most of the people in years, and so your only points of reference for many of them are things that happened back in the late 70s. So is it really polite to go up to someone in their 50s and say, "Oh yeah, I remember you. You're the kid who ripped out the seat of your pants in gym class." Isn't there a statute of limitations for some of these memories? And at what point are we obligated to stop calling someone by their school nickname? No one in life ever gets a flattering nickname. Isn't it always the slowest runner that everyone calls Flash? At Paola High School, there was Lumpy Duncan, a big-hearted, offensive guard, lumpy kind of kid who started a shave in seventh grade, and who we all remember most for accidentally crashing his Dodge Rambler into the side of a giant red Coke truck on the way to school, claiming that the sun got in his eyes. Ironically, Lumpy is now a driver's ed teacher. There was also Bulldog Bob Brown, so named not because of his tenacious spirit, but because he had a terrible underbite. Reunions, by definition and design, are places then where old nicknames and old stories are revisited over and over again. No matter how many years have gone by, no matter how much you might have accomplished in your life, at reunions everyone remembers when you turned the wrong way in the marching band halftime show, or when you started that epic food fight in the cafeteria. Calvin Rosie was a classmate of mine, a farm kid, and a good trombone player. And even though he's a successful adult now, everyone in Paola remembers when he was out in a hayfield as a kid, when a Kansas thunderstorm blew in suddenly, and a bolt of lightning hit so close to Calvin that he was zapped and ended up losing the two little toes on both of his feet. Now, to seventh grade boys, there is nothing cooler than being the kid who now only has eight toes because he survived a lightning strike. But is that something you necessarily want to bring up at your 35th high school reunion? Class reunions can be hard, especially if you've moved away from your hometown, because they force us to ask, who are we now? Are we still the track star, the cheerleader, the math whiz, the kid who could fix any car? Are we still the awkward teenager, the one not asked to prom, the kid with bad acne, the druggie, the slouch, the nerd? Reunions set before you very hard questions. Who are you? What have you done with your life? Back in the 60s and 70s, we knew a lot of things. We knew about the Beatles and Rolling Stones, about polyester leisure suits, bell-bottom pants, and baby blue tuxedos to be worn to prom. We also knew about Vietnam and Watergate, Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter. And after graduation day, more than likely the group had their own dreams about college, marriage, kids, careers. But looking back over the years, reunions force you to realize all the things that you've learned about that you wish you'd never, ever heard of. Addictions and divorce, prostate cancer, miscarriages, mastectomies, Columbine High School, Sandy Hook Elementary School. Our cars are safer to drive now, and medical care has greatly advanced. But we're not automatically happier and healthier. And despite the internet and social media available at our fingertips, we often feel lonelier and more disconnected than ever. More Americans die today of suicide than of car accidents. And so as we look for answers, we don't often look for those answers in church the way we used to when we were kids growing up with our families. If you think it's hard to go back to your old high school after 30 or more years, think about going back to church when your religious education quite possibly stopped with your fourth grade Sunday school class, when you hadn't thought seriously about God and Jesus since the days of flannel graphs and film strip projectors, and hearing stories about David and Goliath and Daniel in the lion's den, and Jesus feeding the multitude from a few fish and loaves. We open up the Bible now, and we hear Jesus say things like, "Foxes have holes and birds have nests, but I have nowhere to lay my head." Or Jesus saying, "Let the dead bury the dead, but as for you, proclaim the kingdom of God." And we shake our adult heads wondering what all that means. Real faith takes work. It takes study, grappling, wrestling with hard things, just like Jacob wrestled with that angel long ago. And in that way, in truth, it's just like life itself. Life which takes hard work and persistence and grappling and wrestling with tough things. And so we need to ask ourselves, are we the same people we were in high school? And is our faith, is it still the same as it was 30 or 40 or 50 years ago? Reunions force us to ask who we are and what we've done with the years God has granted us here on earth. Now, sadly, some members of my class of 1978 weren't gifted with as many years as other classmates. And those who remain have assuredly passed the halfway point in their lives, that imaginary point marked by when we start thinking more about the past than we do the future. We worry less about writing resumes and more about writing memoirs. Reunions force those who gather together to grapple with the poet Mary Oliver's lingering question. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? At their best, reunions let you sit down next to someone and start over. To simply let them tell you about the person they've become without pretense or any baggage and nicknames of the past. Kelly, the cheerleader, is now a nurse midwife. Todd, the mortician's son, happily works in a camera shop. Bill, best remembered for being able to flip butter patties up so they would stick on the ceiling of the cafeteria, has had a long career as an air traffic controller. Toby, who doubly struggled with smoking pot and being the principal's son, is now a gifted artist and an excellent glass blower. Some classmates never left our hometown, which is fine. We rarely give the respect we ought to those who lead, quote, ordinary lives, who don't follow a great path of ambition, but who stay put and put down deep roots in their own community. Because they're the ones who keep our memories safe. They're the ones who deliver the mail and fix the plumbing and teach the next generation of students the Paola High School fight song. It's at a class reunion that you can sit down next to Calvin Rosie, who memorably lost his little toes back in junior high, and you hear that he's married, that he has several kids, including a few that he and his wife adopted, and how this former trombone player in the marching band has spent much of his adult life running a small music store, one of those establishments that rents out instruments to school kids, instruments that will constantly have to have their valves fixed because of unthinking boys, have their clarinet pads replaced because of inattentive girls, renting out dented French horns and scratch trumpets that are destined to be further mangled and mishandled, but that miraculously are still able to play Sousa marches from high school auditorium stages year after year after year. Calvin Rosie has touched scores of lives, but you would only learn that if you do the hard work of sitting down next to him and starting fresh and asking without pretense or pressure, "What have you been doing since we last met?" It takes work and intentionality to go back to a class reunion and have a good time. And the same is true about going to church, particularly if you're going back after being away for a while. To carry your childhood faith back inside church walls, to be willing to open yourself up honestly to God today, who sits down right next to you on the pew and asks, "Tell me, what have you done with your one wild and precious life?" And in that conversation with God, there's no need to pretend you're something you're not. God saw you naked as a baby and saw you naked in the shower last week. God's known you as the kid with acne, as the awkward high schooler in an ill-fitting graduation robe and mortarboard, as an adult driving through town, as someone trying to pay the bills. God already knows all of the choices you've made, but God still wants to hear you talk about them, how you make sense of your life, how you've learned so much about so many things that perhaps you wish you'd never heard of. If you're willing to do that hard work, if you're willing to be vulnerable before God, God promises to help you make sense of your story. To sit beside you as you read passages from Luke where Jesus rebukes his disciples when they wanted to call down fire upon the inhospitable Samaritans and destroy them. And then God quietly asks us, "Why is it? Why is it that you and other people are so anxious to call down fire from heaven on those you fear, those you distrust, those whose stories you simply don't know?" God sits beside us as we tell our old stories and invariably fall back in the patterns of old memories of how we've been hurt or treated unfairly by others. And then God quietly says, "Let the dead stories rest in peace now. Don't look back. Where are you now in your journey of faith? Walk forward with me. toward my kingdom and my peace. Faith takes work. It takes guts to believe that God's unconditional love is for us, not because we've earned it through our resumes and physiques and bank accounts, but because that's the way God is, loving us despite our flaws and our failings and our messed up life stories. Faith takes work because it reminds us that in this life, every day is a class reunion. Because everyone you meet is ultimately a classmate. All of us have been teacher's pet. All of us have been ostracized and the kid left alone to eat their lunch in the cafeteria. All of us have been bullied. All of us have been loved. It takes work to remember that you belong to God and that you're forgiven by Christ. And it's one wild and precious life that begins today. And the work of that life, that's work worth doing. Hey, look us over. Sound out a cheer. We are the Panthers. Aren't you glad we're here? And that's the news from Pittsburgh, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the Presbyterians are above average. Amen.